X11. Number 1B.
Then Jesus went on and said, the wind, and the wind in the Hebrew was the same term as the spirit, the wind bloweth where it listeth. The spirit bloweth where it listeth. You can't outline what God should do. And thou hearest the sound thereof, but canst not tell whence it cometh and whither it goeth. Gives us a wonderful description, really, of spirit, which says we cannot decide from which cause should come anything and for what purpose it should be created. The human mind cannot decide on that, cannot outline that, because the only mind can outline, though it is never outlined, but the human mind, our desires, our motives, our will, cannot outline what should happen. The wind, the spirit blows where it listeth, and we cannot tell whence it should go, what purpose it should fulfill humanly. So that we have a wonderful sense here that we have to let the spirit operate the way the spirit wants to operate and not try to use spirit for our purposes, for our wishes, for the fulfillment of our desires. Here we have to have that wonderful ability of spirit which says, let the spirit decide what should happen. So that we really feel at that point, you see, that the spirit blows where it listens. Well, what is that wind? What is that spirit? You know, every time now when you read something about God or a term for God, be it God or the Lord or the Spirit of God, we can always elaborate that in order to have a bigger picture, a more complete picture, and can always substitute the seventh synonymous term for that. That's how I do it. I always, when I read God, I say, what does God mean? God just means G-O-D. That's all what it means. But if I give to that G-O-D some sense, I put there mind and spirit and soul and principle and life and truth and love, see. So, can you see what Jesus wanted to say? He said, you know, the wind blows where it listens, and it accomplishes that what the spirit wants to accomplish. It will go where the spirit wants to go. So I begin and say, what does it mean? And I say, oh, that's it, uh-huh. In this case, I have to have a consciousness which says, that mind says, I, mind, have an idea. I, mind, conceive of every idea. Where spirit says, I, spirit, am going to unfold that idea and to order the steps of the unfoldment of that idea. Where soul says, I, soul, I'm going to define what should be accomplished. I am going to define the mission of everything. Where principle says, I, principle, am going to demonstrate what I, principle, want to demonstrate and not what you people want to demonstrate. And life says, I, life, I'm going to multiply and to exalt the situation the way I want to exalt it. And truth comes along and says, I, truth, alone knows what is true and what should be the right proposition and the right effect. You don't know. And love says, I, love, want to fulfill what I, love, have in view. I have set the goal. I have the plan, and I operate in the plan of love, and therefore I am going to arrange everything within that plan so that finally that plan, that design of God, finds its fulfillment. And in that measure, I lose completely a sense of me as an I, as a person. So the Spirit blows where it listens. Nicodemus then asked, but how can these things be? He wasn't quite sure what Jesus was talking about. So Jesus answered and said, and no man has ascended up to heaven, but he that came down from heaven, even the Son of Man which is in heaven. Can you see, he gives three phases as an answer. No man goes up to heaven, but he that comes down from heaven, second, he that comes down from heaven is even the Son of God who is in heaven. So you have three different, and you can see that grammar does not obey spiritual order. It's in the reversed order grammatically. So put it into a spiritual order, and if we put it into spiritual order, the answer that Jesus gave, and Nicodemus said, but how can that be? How can that be demonstrated? How can that come to happen? Jesus' answer is now spiritually, logically, spiritually ordered. He said, there is the Son of Man who is already in heaven, first, and he comes down. Your teacher come from God. Son of Man which is in heaven can translate itself to the point of the world. He comes down from heaven. And what does it do? The third stage, it makes man ascend to heaven. So no man has ascended up to heaven, but he that came down from heaven, even the Son of Man who is in heaven. Can you see that sometimes when you read the Bible and the textbook, you have to translate grammatical order into spiritual order in order to understand the divine mechanism of the modus operandi. So here we have it again. His starting point is man who is in heaven, the perfect concept of man. That perfect concept of man translates itself always to the point of humanity, to the point of necessity. He comes down from heaven, and in that way man ascends to heaven. Which means in practical language, really, that if we have a sense we should rise up to heaven, that we know this is not the starting point, that we should not have that wish of rising up to heaven, but that actually our whole consciousness should start out from where one should start out, the man, the Son of Man, who is in heaven, and see that that idea has a Christ and comes to the world. And what does it do to the world? It lifts the world up to heaven, the third stage, which is nothing else but showing really the order of Word, Christ, and Christianity, but which shows also the method of tackling the question of that new birth. How can I be in heaven? Not by starting to try to get up to heaven. That's religion. Every religion teaches how to get up to heaven, and that you should get up to heaven. Whereas John, writer of the Gospel of John, he understood Jesus. He was, so to say, the only one who could see the science that Jesus was teaching. And therefore, he always gave the scientific method in order to bring light into a ontological question. Here we have it. Go out from God. Go out from the seven synonymous terms. If you go out from the seven synonymous terms, and see that the seven synonymous terms only know the ideas of God, then we have the Son of Man in heaven. That will do something to the human situation. That consciousness will somehow leaven the human situation. It comes down to the human situation, will leaven it and leaven it until it brings it up and out of mortal mind into the spiritual reality and the identification of the kingdom of God. So, a new birth is never accomplished through a sense of trying to improve a situation. It's always going out, a teacher come from God. Yes. Well, that's the story how Jesus at his time was telling about how to be reborn, and how then afterwards John, his disciple, tried to explain it to posterity. So he showed to Nicodemus that spirit gives birth to the true man that is in heaven, and we too are like Nicodemus that are asking, how can I be reborn? How can my state of things be improved? How can things change? And we know that if we try to change them on a metaphysical basis, we experience those changes as suffering. But if we tackle the whole question from the point of view of the synonymous terms, then we choose the way of science. So that through science we really should be able to have a birth that is without suffering, a birth without pain, a birth without crisis, and the purer we can stick to the true science of obstetrics, to the true science of birth, the purer, the less, the easier the birth flows, and we don't have to struggle with a lot of crises and chemicalization and ups and downs and I don't know what. The birth will be natural and safe. This birth of spirit goes always on. It isn't something that goes on at the moment when I try to think about it. That birth of spirit goes always on. The question only is, do I go with the birth? Then it is without suffering. If I'm not going with the birth, that is, if I want to achieve something else in my life, if I have my own concept of life, if I have my own conception of what I should do, how to do it, when to do it, and how things should happen, then I'm going against the birth. So birth is not something that only happens then when I want to see a new idea coming forth. Being itself is spirit, and being itself as spirit always gives constantly birth to the development of the spiritual idea. That's why we have throughout history, over thousands of years, we have a development in the human, in the world, because the impact of the idea is constantly precipitating itself on humanity and on civilization, and hammers, so to say, on civilization until mortals give way to the higher idea. But why should always every progress be accompanied with a crisis, with pain, with birth pangs? Why should always be a revolution be accompanied with blood? Why shouldn't there be a wonderful evolution taking place? It would be an evolution if we would go with the birth. Therefore, the great importance of knowing the method of the spiritual birth. So so that we constantly try to go with the birth, therefore experience, so to say, painless development, painless progress, painless achievement. How? Now, the moment we ask for a scientific order and a scientific method, it is always better to turn to Mrs. Eddy, because she was living in an age of science and therefore had to give the science of the Bible and show forth what is the scientific order and method underlying the biblical phenomena, the biblical experiences. So I turn now to the other presentation of birth, to the textbook, to page 462 and 63. On page 463, as a side note, is that important paragraph on scientific obstetrics, which starts out with teacher and student which starts out by saying teacher and student should also be familiar. What does it mean, that also? It means that there is apparently something that has preceded and that is necessary to know, or there wouldn't be an also. So let's go back to the preceding paragraph, where Mrs. Eddy, so to say, prepares the ground for the birth, that where she shows in the side note, she calls it that anatomy defined, and the whole paragraph is, so to say, about spiritual anatomy. So that she translates the anatomy of the womb within which the birth should take place, that she transforms that womb, the anatomy of the womb, first into its spiritual signification, so that we have a spiritual anatomy adapted really for a natural birth to take place. Therefore, let's give just a little heed to this preceding paragraph on spiritual anatomy, where she indicates and says anatomy when conceived of spiritually. You see, just as afterwards she translates a material birth into a spiritual concept of birth, so here first she takes the belief of anatomy, which is the predisposing womb, so to say, for a birth to take place, and translates the anatomy into a spiritual concept. And it's very interesting to see that the whole paragraph on spiritual obstetrics doesn't really make sense until, preceding to it, we are clear about the spiritual anatomy, our spiritual anatomy. So she shows that anatomy, when conceived of spiritually, is what? She says it is mental self-knowledge. And that mental self-knowledge consists in the dissection of thoughts in order to discover their quality, quantity, and origin. This is terrifically interesting and important. You know, it means it's no use to start with scientific obstetrics and to try to give birth to something if we have not beforehand really analyzed what do we want to bring forth. What is in our mentality that yearns that it can bring forth its ideal? Is it something selfish? Is it a selfish purpose, a selfish ambition? Is it a selfish motive? What is it, actually, that we're trying to gain? what we try to achieve with Christian Science? Is it actually that you want to give birth to a motor car and to a better house and to a better job, or what is it that is in our mentality? Therefore, first, dissect what is in your consciousness, in your mind, to discover really what is the quality of our desires, of our motives, of our thoughts. And first be honest to oneself and really ask oneself that terrific big question, why do I want Christian Science? For what purpose do I actually want Christian Science? Do I want Christian Science that I have a better material life, a more successful material life, that I gain more power over mankind, that I get a better position in business? What is it? What is the aim? What is the quality of it? What is the quantity of it? The quantity of our motives, of our aims, and its origin. Is it something that comes out of my human will, out of my human longings, or is it something that I feel should be the flow of mind's own ideas, something that should tell me, oh, it is something that shows the infinite unfoldment of the light of mind? What is in my mentality? Well, what is the reason why I study Christian Science? And you know, this is a very important decision. And so she goes on and says, are thoughts divine or human? Therefore, before she really wants to start in and show how one can give birth to an idea, she first shows and asks very pertinently and say, are you motivated by ideas, or are you motivated by illusions, by beliefs, by human concepts, by opinions? What is the motivation? What is the origin? She says, that is the important question. Can you see how she first states our motives, our motivation? That's the important question. If we go wrong at that point, then all the rest will go wrong. She says, this branch of study is indispensable to the excision of error. And then she goes on and shows what kind of motivation we should have. And it's interesting to analyze it. She says, the anatomy of Christian Science teaches when and how to probe the self-inflicted wounds of selfishness, malice, envy, and hate. It teaches the control of mad ambition. And I think if one considers that within oneself, one is sometimes quite surprised that there are mad ambitions within us that motivate our study of Christian Science. That there are ambitions to achieve something that nobody else achieves, to the ambitions to be greater than the other, the ambition to be a bigger shot than the others, the ambition to get along better than the others. If one analyzes, one is quite surprised to find, if one goes deep enough, that the motives are not always quite pure. That there is a lot of mad ambition that lingers within one's consciousness, and therefore we first have to dissect our thoughts and make quite clear, is that the motivating power? She says, it unfolds the hallowed influences of, and she gives three influences. And all three have to do with the sense of love. It unfolds the hallowed influences of unselfishness, which means no self-love, of philanthropy, which is the love for mankind, and of spiritual love. It seems that the whole thing begins to turn around the question, what kind of love is within you? Is that love within you actual love, or is it hate and malice when it is dissected properly? Or is that love mad ambition? And all covered up with a sense, I only want it for the good of mankind. And so John Dolly used to pound it in terrifically. If you remember in the Oxford Summer School 1949, he just pounded it in and pounded it in. And he came back and back to it to say, be sure about your motives. What motivates you? Is your motive pure? And under pure he meant really spiritually pure and not just humanly pure. Because humanly we can say, I only want to do this and achieve this and that to be a blessing for mankind. And we can cover up a lot with that human sense of love. It urges the government of the body both in health and in sickness. Is our motive only to overcome error, sickness? Is our motive only that we have dominion over something? Or is it that our motive is also in health? That is a motive to have the love for truth's sake? Are we motivated to seek truth for truth's sake? Is that our love? Or is our love to seek truth because we know truth is going to help us? Again, this would not be spiritual love. This would not really be a purity of motive. So, here we have this first paragraph as a preparatory paragraph which says, now, before you feel that you want to give birth to your true identity, be sure that our motive is first analyzed and that our motive is pure. Yes. Then we can go to the next paragraph on scientific obstetrics.